This is District Sentinel Radio. It's that newscast featuring reporting from the left. I'm Sam Sachs.
I'm Sam Knight.
We're in Washington, D.C. We're in the Harper's Good Girl Studios. Check out the website, districtsentinel.com. Got all the news on Donald Trump Jr. coming up shortly.
This podcast is now 100% devoted to Donald Trump Jr. news.
Fortunately, yes. Plus, later in the show, a sneak peek at some bonus content for Patreon subscribers. An interview with one of the authors of a new study that says Hillary Clinton lost the election last year because communities that were most affected by America's wars turned against her. And it's a pretty compelling argument. The full interview is available to Patreon subscribers right now at patreon.com, but we'll give you a preview of it later in the show. By the way, now is a great time to become a Patreon subscriber because all new signups this week get a personalized haiku. Yes, Haiku Week is back. And, well, what do you know? We've got some poetry to read for today's show. First, a haiku for Jeb. It is Jeb, just Jeb, without exclamation point, and not cucked by Trump.
Thank you, Jeb. Here's a haiku for Twitter user at Diana Sphere Moon. Podcast listening while Sphere Moon is glistening. True Twitter haiku.
Thank you, Diana Sphere Moon. And thank you to all our new subscribers for Haiku Week.
Before we get on to the news, do you want to tell our listeners about how you tried and failed to get blocked by Al Giordano?
I don't know. It's pretty embarrassing. I didn't want to bring it up on air, but since you mentioned it, I sent a picture of Al's face on a DiGiorno pizza box and said, Al DiGiorno. And instead of blocking me, he just called me a pathetic dude bro who's spending my night putting his head on DiGiorno pizza boxes just to get 3 likes on a tweet.
Well,
and I couldn't argue with him. Although he was spending his night responding to me, putting his head on a DiGiorno pizza box that got 3 likes. And his response to me only garnered 2 likes. Both of those were, one was from me, the other was from our precious boy, Nate, my roommate.
Well, you still have another chance, it seems. Maybe he muted you, though. You got to step it up.
Yeah. And one of the people, I know why I was blocked by Eichenwald. It was pretty mild. I shouldn't have been blocked by Eichenwald for, you know.
Was it the dirt by Eichenwald?
No, it was just, you know, pointing out he's a lunatic. But then I was also blocked by, I don't know, what's her name, Sarah Lerner or something? Or,
oh, yeah, you were blocked by her?
I don't know why. I think I was chain blocked because I don't remember ever interacting with her.
I think I've interacted with her a few times. I'm not blocked. I think you may have owned her.
Maybe well I done. Did. I must have blacked out. Also, quick reminder, I'm going to do this every episode. We're going on tour at the end of the month. July 25th in Pittsburgh, July 27th in Columbus. Tickets are free. Get your tickets online. We've tweeted out the links and posted them on Facebook. All right, it's Tuesday, July 11th, 2017. Here's the news. We titled yesterday's episode, Don Jr., the Dumbest Trump Son, and that was before we had any clue of the new revelations that would come out today, courtesy of Don Jr. himself. On Tuesday, Donald Jr. released the email exchange that led to him meeting with a Russian lawyer last June under the pretenses of receiving dirt on the Clinton campaign. And it sure as shit doesn't make Donald Jr. look good. So why did he release the emails? Well, because the New York Times was about to do it if he didn't. Trump Jr. is told by British promoter and friend Rob Goldstone in the emails that, quote, the Crown Prosecutor of Russia was interested in providing the Trump campaign with official documents and information that would incriminate Hillary and her dealing with Russia. Now, there's no crown prosecutor in Russia, but Goldstone may have been referring to the Russian prosecutor general. I don't know. Who the fuck knows? That's a working theory here. Goldstone goes on to inform Trump Jr. that this is obviously very high-level and sensitive information, but is part of Russia and its government's support for Mr. Trump. So this is, a pretty sketchy email. But in response, Trump Jr. writes, quote, "If it's what you say, I love it, especially later in the summer." So a few days later, Goldstone sets up a meeting for Trump to discuss the matter further with a Russian lawyer. This is Natalia Veselnitskaya, who the New York Times reports is known to be close with the Russian prosecutor general. That meeting happens last summer, June 9th. So this is a pretty weird story. Doesn't quite fit in the narrative that's been presented with regard to collusion, since the Russian lawyer was billed as having incriminating info on Clinton about her dealings in Russia. So apparently she didn't really have anything other than maybe publicly known information about that uranium deal story that went around before the election.
Maybe there's a Hillary Clinton P tape.
Yeah.
Probably a Bill Clinton P tape. You can bet your money on that.
It could be true that maybe the Russians were probing around to see if the campaign would be receptive to help, or maybe this Russian lawyer lobbying on behalf of repealing the Magnitsky Act simply used a promise of Oppo research as a hook to get a meeting with Trump officials.
Yeah, and maybe there was some grooming going on. I mean, maybe the Russians were interested in seeing how much the Trumps were willing to help. Would they express interest in reversing Magnitsky in exchange for some kompromat? Sorry. In doing so, it kind of looks like...
I'm not familiar with the term.
Well, anyway, in doing so, it kind of looks like the Russians generated some kompromat on the Trump campaign itself.
Yeah. Either way, this does reveal a pattern of behavior that Donald Jr., at least, and Paul Manafort and Jared Kushner, who were also in that June 9th meeting, are more than willing to play dirty with the help of Moscow. It also contradicts the Trump administration's narrative that Moscow didn't support their candidate. I mean, it's clearly spelled out in the emails that it did. That's assuming the Goldman email is to be believed. And the Goldman email seems to be based off like three different sources. He heard it from someone else who is friends with someone else that the Crown prosecutor is looking to help the Trump campaign. So we could be seeing an elaborate game of telephone at work here, too, that kind of fudged the facts here. Still too early to tell if anything illegal happened here or if Donald Jr. is just a huge dumbass. That's known. He's a huge dumbass. We'll have to glean more details about what happened in the meeting. If any information was actually exchanged, both Donald Jr. and the Russian lawyer deny that any information was exchanged.
I know a lot of liberals are gleeful about this news, but if anything, this seems to confirm thus far the alleged Russian meddling didn't change the outcome. That was down to Republicans' tendency to fall in line behind a fascist. Nothing conservatives do better than take orders from an authoritarian fucking nationalistic weirdo. Also, Hillary's poor record and her decision to hire a bunch of dumbasses. Both of those things seem to impact the outcome much more than Russian meddling. If you'd been fucking up at your job all year and wanted to avoid people at home who hate you, why not just cancel going home? That's what Republicans sort of did today. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced that the first 2 weeks of the August recess would be canceled. The move came after a remarkable press conference featuring eight Republican senators calling on the midsummer break to be called off. Here's Montana's Steve Daines asking for the recess to be called off, describing how much his party has sucked ass.
If you were going to school and you were getting failing grades in your spring semester, you better stay in school for the summer and go to summer school, not take a recess.
This isn't just because Republicans haven't passed a health care bill. They haven't, of course. But Mitch McConnell is hoping to proceed next week on a vote on another Obamacare repeal and replace proposal. Legislation is expected to be released on Thursday. In addition to health care, though, Republicans are also hoping to pass tax reform, and they need to pass a budget by the end of September, the end of the fiscal year. And they need to agree to pass a bill to raise the debt ceiling, which is expected to be breached in October or November. If you remember the Obama years, you'll know that Republican lawmakers held up debt ceiling increases to try to force through government spending cuts, even though it could force the U.S. government to default on its debt. And one of the leading lawmakers behind these debt ceiling holdups was none other than Mick Mulvaney, who now gets to write veto threats for Donald Trump as head of the White House OMB. So expect Republicans in Congress to screw around with the debt ceiling. But back to healthcare. Even though Mitch McConnell is hoping for a vote next week, saving August for the other stuff he needs to do, it is looking like August will be used to try to pass a healthcare bill, if statements from South Dakota Senator Mike Rounds were any indication today.
Healthcare, in the meantime, this is something that I think we're moving in the right direction on. I think we can move it forward, but we're going to need some more time and allow more members to actually ask the right kinds of questions that they want to and feel comfortable with what they're doing. We're impacting 18% of the entire economy. Allow the time to actually get this done correctly.
And finally, amid the latest breakout of Russiagate news, it's important to keep things in perspective with regard to lessons learned from 2016. Russia remains the dominant working theory for many in the Democratic Party and in the media as to why Donald Trump won the presidency. Many on the left have argued that the hyper-focus on Russia, though, has distracted from other factors that likely had more of an influence. For example, the Clinton campaign's strategy to turn moderate Republicans rather than embrace the Bernie wing of the party. Or the multitude of tactical errors committed by the Clinton campaign. Essentially, Russian active measures, hacked emails, bots, and fake news aside, had Clinton run a competent campaign, she would have easily won. Now, this is a debate that will rage on for a million years, likely. It will ring around the cosmos. But last week, I caught some research that posits another theory for Democrats losing last year, one that, in fact, explains losses on both sides of the aisle going back more than a decade. That theory: elections are being swung right now by communities most devastated by America's wars. That's the thesis put forward in a new study by a couple of professors titled Battlefield Casualties and Ballot Box Defeat. Did the Bush-Obama Wars cost Clinton the White House? The paper puts forward actual data linking counties with high war casualties to Clinton's defeat. On Tuesday, Sam and I sat down and interviewed one of the authors of that study, Francis Shen, Associate Professor of Law and McKnight Presidential Fellow at the University of Minnesota. That interview is available exclusively to our subscribers on Patreon. It's a real eye-opening chat. I personally learned something from it. So if you're a subscriber, check it out. If you're not, sign up at patreon.com/districtsentinel. In the meantime, here's a short clip of our chat with Francis about his research.
We've been studying this with my colleague Doug Kreiner and I for about 10 years. We've been studying a couple things. One is that those who are fighting and dying and coming home wounded to the United States, U.S. soldiers, aren't evenly distributed across the country, and they're more likely to come from communities that are lower on the education scale, lower on the income scale, and more rural, less urban. And what we've found is, first of all, that variation exists. And secondly, that in different elections, it's been tied to election outcomes. So just by way of history, in 2006, kind of an anti-Bush effort, we saw those communities that had been harder hit, we saw them come out and punish Republican politicians. So fast forward to 2016, and to answer your question, it's not been part of the dominant narrative, but we wanted to see, and we went back and did some data analysis to see if communities that were harder hit in Iraq and Afghanistan, and by harder hit, I mean that their communities are more likely to see their young men and women coming home in coffins from fighting overseas, were they more likely to support Trump than Clinton? And specifically, were they more likely to those communities to support Trump than they had been to support Romney just 4 years earlier? And what we found is that, yes, Trump was able to, in those communities, garner support. There was a significant relationship between the casualty rate and support for Trump, even compared to Romney, meaning it's not just that there were more Republicans, but that there were more individuals who previously had not voted for Romney, but now were willing to vote for Trump. And we control for a bunch of the other factors you mentioned. It's not that they don't matter. So yes, Trump did better in counties where there were more Republicans, of course. But it was a factor that mattered, the casualty factor, and mattered enough that we think it could have flipped, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan because those margins were so thin. So our major point is that this should be a part of the story. Is it necessarily the most important factor? No, we're not claiming that, but it is an important factor and one that was overlooked and we think still continues to be overlooked.
Thanks again to Francis Shen. Check out the full interview by subscribing at patreon.com/districtsentinel. That's the show today. Listeners, call our rant line, leave a message. That number is 202-684-6108. Thanks to our sponsors, Chris Simpson, the Congressional Dish podcast hosted by Jen Briney at congressionaldish.com and levelnews.org. Listen to this episode and all other episodes of our nightly newscast by going to districtsentinel.com. If you haven't yet, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud or Stitcher or tune in by searching for District Sentinel Radio. Leave a review, give us a rating, tell your friends to listen. We're back tomorrow. We're here in DC, so you don't have to be.